You're storing memories to lose them again. You'll forget everything when this whole thing ends. You can't even predict what tomorrow brings. But don't lose track of living in the present.
Welcome to the Memory Distillery, everyone. I'm Anthony Vernary.
And I'm John Hoke Deck, and each week we will malt, mash, ferment, and distill our way through the spirits of our past in the form of long-loved movies.
I'm just going to check my notes here real quick. John, the line is, and I'm John Deck. I don't know who John Hoke Deck is.
Oh, well, let me introduce myself. That's like, wait, am I the devil? No. we took a little hiatus. I'm sure at least seven of you noticed. And when we were gone, I went ahead and got married and decided,
you know. Got married?
Yeah. And I am like, you know, it's just too much fun when like other people get to get new names when they're married. So I went ahead and I got a new name now too. So yeah, that's me. New brand. This time around, I'm funny. So we can look forward to that.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I was part of the deal, so.
Oh, well, all right.
Yeah.
We'll go with it. That's if it's in your contract, I'm not going to tell you you can't, but.
But yeah, had a lot of traveling.
I haven't read it because I can't read.
I got to see BTS in concert, lots of great things. And yeah, I know you traveled a bit too, didn't you?
I did. So my family and I went to New York for my son's spring break, and rather than a round trip plane ticket, we flew from here to New York, and then our return trip was via Amtrak the whole way.
Yes! See, I don't have a button
it
for applause.
So, but... here, I'll do it for you. There we go. I get more applause, and it's a little louder. Yeah, we took the train, and it was fucking awesome. It was it was a lifelong dream of both mine and my wife's, and it was just the best experience possible. My only complaints about it were, one, that I wish we had high-speed rail, because it was a 60-hour trip, and two, that there was more frequent trains beyond the Eastern Corridor. If we could get more than two trains through Salt Lake a day, that would be pretty amazing. Because I would do it. It would be my preferred mode of travel if those two conditions could be met.
Yeah, I hear you. I love traveling by train. That's my preference, and it sucks that it's fallen apart in the last 50 years. But hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah, we're just going to keep building cities around cars.
We could just turn our mind back to an earlier time, back when a lot of people traveled by train. Maybe not in this movie. But no, it was the heyday, I'd say.
It sure was. I would agree with that. In matter of fact, that's what we'll talk about right now is our movie this week, Dirty Dancing from 1987, directed by Emile Ardolino. And I forgot my sound drop. Here you go.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
That's right. Nobody puts baby in a corner. I haven't watched this since I was probably like 10.
Wow.
My mother and my sister like adore this movie. I was never really a fan of it growing up. I always had this like this sort of connection to it, like, oh, it's a chick flick, and I was a dumb kid who very like, oh, I'm a boy and I do boy things and I don't watch chick flicks and da 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 da. So it that's obviously worn off for me in recent years, but I never got back around to trying out Dirty Dancing, so I'm actually pretty excited to jump in and see what I have in store here. I have memories of scenes, and there's the quintessential line and all that stuff, but I don't really have a ton of memory beyond that. John, when's the last time you saw this?
Well, you know, just for overall transparency, for what we're doing here, when coming back from break, our thought was, you know, we should do a series of movies that highlight the feel of summer, you know? And I believe you actually, this was one you suggested. And I have to say this goes outside a little bit of some of the rules we set for ourselves, because I do watch this fairly often.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, so I've seen it within the last 2 years for sure, I'd say. But yeah, I'd probably say every couple of years or so I'll watch it. It's kind of, it started off as a quote unquote guilty pleasure movie. And then I just stopped feeling guilty. And I just said, you know what? I just am going to watch it and enjoy it. And that's what I do. So this won't be so much a trip, nostalgic trip down memory lane. And, oh, I don't remember any of that. I'm going to have a pretty solid grasp of what we're watching. But that's okay. Because it's all about that summer vibe. And I think this is going to really deliver for us.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, we will be doing some more summer movies here coming up. So we'll talk about that in the back half of the show. But we're going to go ahead and watch this. It's currently streaming in a few places, Sling and Freeform. It's not on any of the real major streamers. So you may just pick it up from the streaming rental services or wherever else. Or maybe you have it in your personal collection. Who knows? Anyway, we're going to go and watch Dirty Dancing. We will be right back. Wow, these sound drops. I got to work on these. I'm a little rusty after 3 months of 3 months of vacation from the show. We are back, everyone. John.
That's me.
I don't really have to ask if you like this, because you mentioned before we watched that you watch it fairly often every couple of years. Any new revelations this time around? Anything different to you, or anything with the memory distillery lens over it now?
Well, you know, and you'll have to forgive me if whether we've brought this up on any of our special episodes where we just have thematic thoughts and ideas and get off topic, but I was reminded, and this was still very much true, that this has got to be one of the best soundtracks to any movie ever. Like, and as far as I'm concerned, I just love the music in this movie. And even though I know it and I've listened to the soundtrack apart from the movie and had a pretty good idea, there were still once or twice when I was like, oh yeah, like I just, you know, forgot that song's in here. And like, so it really, I feel like in my accelerated old age, a lot of my music sensibilities are reaching in and sampling a lot of different elements of what I would used to call maybe, you know, throwback soul, throwback rock, and like that really builds the foundation of this movie, and I loved it. So that was one thing. Like you said, I wasn't surprised on whether or not I, you know, enjoyed the movie. Yes, I did. It was I really surprised by anything? Not really. But that confirmation that the soundtrack is just awesome was something I really jived with. So that was cool for me, but you're kind of the guinea pig here that is, you know, we're really throwing back into the limelight now that you're a full grown boy and no longer one of those kids who thinks that, you know, oh, chick flick, blah blah blah. I mean, what do you think now?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. Like, I actually really enjoyed it this time around. There was a lot that I completely, mostly out of being an ignorant child, like, just didn't really grasp until seeing it as an adult. I do want to talk about the music for a second. You mentioned how much you love the soundtrack. I really like the mixture of period music, like 1963 modern, and then also 1987 modern, like, combining the two and making it into this kind of cohesive movie. And there's even kind of like a wink at the camera meta thing that the Max Kellerman character does.
Yeah.
Which is like, do you guys have any sheet music for this? Which it's obviously a song written in the 80s. But it was just that whole piece of it to me was very fun. I really did like the music. There's a dog crying outside my studio door.
Happens to the best of us.
I'm trying to record a podcast. Very rude, Thor. Jesus. Anyhow, I really liked the montage of Baby learning the routine too. Like that whole that whole scene was great, and her dancing on the little bridge and stuff like that. I thought that was really cool.
Like I love seeing this again through the lens of knowing more about the history of the movie, and it's kind of infamous that Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze didn't get along very well. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know.
They, because they'd met Red Dawn, which is a movie we've watched, and right?
The only other Patrick Swayze movie we've done, actually, yeah. That I can think of.
Yeah. Well, geez, I can't believe we haven't done Roadhouse. Anyway.
We will rectify that situation.
Anyway, so they met, didn't have a million scenes together, but I guess Jennifer Grey really didn't like him very much and was resistant to joining Dirty Dancing because of that fact. Just because they just didn't connect very well. So they joined up, and sure enough, they had some personality clashes, and some people exaggerate it more than others, but let's just say they didn't get along. And the scene when they're practicing and she keeps laughing, like when she's ticklish, when he's like doing the hand down the side.
Right.
Like, that was not scripted. She really was ticklish, and Patrick Swayze was really annoyed with her. And felt she was being very unprofessional, and was just like, come on. So those shots where he just gets that look like he's just pissed off is real, and they kept it in because they loved what that told for the story. But that wasn't acting. That was just the mood as they were trying to like get through this.
That's interesting. I had no idea about that. I wonder if any of our listeners knew that. I wonder if my mother knew that. My mother listens to the show. My sister will almost certainly listen to this episode. Both of you, comment on the Memory Distillery's Facebook page, the post that we put up this week about Dirty Dancing, and tell us if you knew that. I'd be interested to know, just because I don't know if you guys, you know, pay attention to the lore of these movies or, you know, the history of them or anything like that. But anyhow, one other thing that I appreciated was how it looked back at the 60s, and when a lot of movies and TV shows look back on the 60s, a lot of it is with this sort of rose-colored glasses feel, like everything was wholesome and we had, you know, family togetherness and everything was good and pure and whatever. They didn't portray this as some sort of feel-good story with a happy ending where everything worked out. Like, it was a lot grittier than that. It was, they talked about like really tough issues like bodily autonomy and classism and things that weren't necessarily addressed even in the mid to late 80s. So this movie, I felt like, was ahead of its time even.
Yeah, interesting. A movie in the 80s set back in the, was it like the early 60s?
I think it was 63 was like the date on the card.
So no matter whether you're saying 60s, 80s, whatever, it certainly was ahead of its time, especially for a quote-unquote fluff piece, you know, like for something lighthearted, summer romp, romantic comedy, I don't know, comedy, but you know what I mean? Like, this, you wouldn't expect this to have that edge to it, and yet it did. And I really enjoy that this was set up as essentially, you know, looking back. I mean, because that's what we do all the time on the show, but like, it was reminiscing. It was, you know, this coming-of-age story where it was understood that this is not a typical romantic happily ever after. Now we're married with three kids and this is how it all happened, but it's more like it was the summer, you know, and stuff like this, you know, happens to people. They can relate, and it was romantic and had all these things and it had a happy ending, but it wasn't, but you knew this wasn't happily ever after kind of ending. And I like that.
No, yeah, and it wasn't even an everything fully resolved kind of happy ending. It was just like a, all right, well, we had these experiences and we did these things and now, like, we're better for it or we're not, or, you know, whatever. And it concludes. It's done. And you don't feel bad at the end, but you don't necessarily feel like it was you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not something where it was, oh, you know, everybody's great, we're good, so thanks. There was some unresolved shit, I'm sure, but anyway. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I felt about it. Jerry Orbach is in this, and I forgot about that.
You mean Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast?
or many other roles.
No, that's the only one I know him from. He's done other stuff. What?
I know. It's not like he was on Law and Order forever. Looking exactly how he did until he died, I'm fairly certain Jerry Orbach materialized into the world looking the way that he did in this movie and remained that way until he died.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when he was like 3 years old, this is what he looked like.
Yes, exactly. Looked like, sounded like. He was already speaking some of these lines.
Yeah. It's very bizarre, I'm sure.
We got a young Wayne Knight in this, too. I forgot he was in this.
Yeah.
as the sort of camp counselor almost. It was nice to see him in this.
Were there any key moments, whether it's related to music or not, that really stick out? I mean, there's certain things that a lot of people connect obviously to the movie, but I'm just wondering personally if some of those things hit for you, or if there's anything that really struck you that's like a standout part of the movie.
That's a good question. So the scene where Baby has to go and get her dad to take care of Penny because she went and got a back alley abortion, and you know she was cut and she was bleeding and things were looking bad, and the way that her father was able to pivot, just like he's dressing his daughter down, and then he gets into the room and instantly is doctor mode, and he's going at it, and he's like asking her questions and treating her and basically kicking everybody out of the room. But the going from that father mode to that doctor mode and then to the protector mode when he's talking to Johnny, and then back to the father mode when he's talking to Baby again, it's like he really, really knew where he stood in life and what his jobs were, whether it was father or general protector or doctor or what have you. He was able to compartmentalize himself.
Oh my God, Thor, what the fuck?
Hey, you want a dog? Anybody want a dog, listeners?
I know. I love you too, buddy, but you gotta stop. Dad's recording a podcast. Can you be a boy, please?
So there's that scene. I liked the scene where they both get frustrated and it's raining and they're just like, fuck it, let's go. And they just drive off. What about you? What are some of your favorite scenes from this movie? Or did you find a new favorite scene on this watching?
No, I mean, I think everything you said, I do agree with as being good. Like, there's a lot of great moments in the movie. And it's funny, like, I keep thinking, again, of all the inside stuff that I know about the movie, like the fact that this was a summer movie quintessentially, but a lot of it was shot like towards the end of fall into winter. And so when they went and it was raining and they took off to the lake to practice and get away from everything, it was like the water was like 40 degrees.
Oh shit.
And there was like leaves had already dropped and were changing color. So they had to spray paint things green so it would look vibrant, like, cause they didn't have color correction on that level in video at the time. It was easier to just spray things green. And they basically both were on the verge of hypothermia, and they didn't do close-ups of them in the water cause their lips were blue and like all this stuff, like that it was difficult and miserable, but they were like laughing and having the time of their life, so to speak.
Well, they never felt like that before.
Yeah, exactly. So I just smile thinking about all that stuff and how easily they pull off the goofy fun that they're having. But yeah, like, and I'm a sucker for, you know, the end scene, the big dance scene, of course, which the lift at the end, they never practiced.
Really?
Did you hear me? They never practiced. They never did it
before. They never practiced that?
One shot, one take, one time. She was scared to death of doing it. And they just did it and nailed it and done.
No wires?
No wires. No. Holy not even practice. Not even rehearsals. They just want it done. So I wonder
fucking
if like
quintessential professionals.
Yeah. I wonder if the practice in the water like was actually helpful. You know, like not just in a narrative style, but in actually performing the lift. So,
I mean, I would hope so.
So, yeah. So, no, I'm impressed by all that. And I do, you know, I think Jerry Orbach in this is probably totally looked over, but he's a very, very solid performance, of course. And I mean, a lot of people really hit the roles this well. Wow, those aren't words in the right order, but it's okay. I'm sure people missed classic Johnisms, like mumbling. So yeah, so I really yes. And then like again, I'm not gonna ask you to go through and like pick favorite songs, things. I didn't ask you to think about that. It just strikes me like I just forgot for a minute that like a song that now is just right up there is just one of my favorites that I just love overall and forgot that it was even in this movie is Cry to Me, you know, by Solomon Burke. And and I was like, oh my God, like it wasn't already so good already. And it leads right in, you know, it's like there's just so much great performing when they're practicing and, you know, when they're, God, what's that song? Can't remember the name of the song, but the one with Mickey and Sylvia.
Well, now I'm going to look at this.
Love is Strange. That's it. Love is Strange.
Oh, okay. Yes.
But like, you know, it's silly. It's fun, but it's just like so classic. And so I think really all those things combined, like there's nothing about this that, you know, wasn't a quick, fun, enjoyable watch, even with the heavier and dark edges to it that you don't normally see. It was still just great. So no complaints on my end.
Yeah, no, the dance scene, I feel like that probably should have just been implied by me. Like that was a great scene. Both dance scenes, the one where she's trying to get away with dancing without her family finding out. Yeah. And then the big number at the end, like they killed it. And it was wonderfully done, and getting the whole audience involved is great, and the jump at the end, I had no idea was not scripted. That's insanity to me.
Well,
not scripted, yeah, but not rehearsed.
Exactly, yeah.
I had no idea that was not rehearsed. That they had did it in a single take. Like that's, and especially for two people who apparently notoriously did not get along on set, they just fucking worked through it and made a good movie. Like fucking hats off to Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze.
I wonder if this
oh shit.
Uh-oh.
Did I jump the gun on that?
It's so,
do we need more
just,
time?
It's so weird because I was about to say I wonder if this is a movie that could be remade nowadays or if it needs to live in the 80s. But I guess if someone hit the Dreamcasting button, we're going to have to try to imagine it in modern.
I don't think we have a choice. Those are the rules.
Well,
I didn't make the rules.
I got to start then by letting you know that both back in the 80s that Sarah Jessica Parker and Sharon Stone auditioned for the role of Baby.
Interesting.
They were
I could see Sarah Jessica. I could see young Sarah Jessica Parker for sure.
Yeah, and after
seeing Sharon Stone
in Total Recall, I think, okay, well, yeah, I could maybe see that. So yeah, so there's that. And then Billy Zane auditioned for Johnny, and Val Kilmer was offered the role before Patrick Swayze, and he turned it down.
That one I did know.
So I just had to pass on those juicy little alternate universe dream casting from the 80s stuff. So who are we going to cast?
So I think we're going to recast Johnny, the Patrick Swayze character. We're going to recast Baby. We'll recast Dr. Hausman, Jerry Orbach. We'll recast Penny, played by Cynthia Rhodes. And we'll round it out with Max Kellerman, the owner of the Kellerman Resort in the Poconos, played by Jack Weston. Where do you want to start, John?
Let's start with some of the smaller parts and lead to our two main. So let's start off with the good old Mr. Kellerman.
Mr. Kellerman. In staying with the aesthetic that Jack Weston gave to Max Kellerman, I am going to go with Kyle Gass of Tenacious D.
I like it a lot. I thought my pick was perfect, but that's pretty great. I really like that.
Who did you have?
Well, I didn't even pick someone who would be my favorite person, but I just like, oh, he's just too perfect as kind of a fun, bumbling, pompous person. I picked Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I would take Kyle Gass or Kelsey Grammer on that role.
Well, see, I bet we can get Kyle for cheaper.
Oh, 100% cheaper.
I mean, we got to keep the budget in mind because it's very important for our sponsor producers. Whew! Anyway, we talked a bunch about Jerry Orbach and his strong role here for Dr. Houseman, Baby's dad. And I wanted, again, to continue. I wanted to pick someone who could play very strong but has soft edges. You know, someone who could be protective, someone who could be very stern, but then someone who would also kind of have that thing, like you could see his heart melt a little for his daughter, that sort of, that angle. And because of who I picked for Baby, I also wanted to pick someone who is British. And so I picked Daniel Craig.
Oh, okay. I like Daniel Craig for that role. I wanted Johnny and Baby to be a mixed race couple and not, I didn't want this to be a whole whitewashed cast. So with that in mind, for Dr. Houseman, I went with a similar sort of mindset in terms of somebody who can play somebody who's stern and strong, but also be soft and caring and fatherly. And so I went with Idris Elba.
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue. There are probably not that many people on the planet that I'd be intimidated by more if someone
than
like
Idris Elba.
Yeah, like if there was someone,
girlfriend's dad.
Yeah, if there was someone I would not want to wake up in the middle of the night to come fix a mistake or something I've done, or you know, it would be like, please no. Like, I don't know
anything but that.
So yeah, I like that. Like, I think he would definitely have that intimidation factor, but also could be warm.
Okay, so we've done Dr. Houseman, we've done that Mr. Kellerman. On to Penny.
Yeah, who'd you pick there?
So for Penny, I just got done watching a show called 1883. It's the prequel to Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter in that, her name is Elsa. She's played by an actress called Isabel May. And I felt like she has this air about her of defiance and just headstrongness, and I felt like that was very much in line with the Penny character, and so that's why I went with her.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. For Penny on my side, I was thinking, I had one person in mind, and then I thought, I couldn't tell, like, she can definitely play younger, and I wasn't sure. I was starting to think, like, Zoe Saldana, who isn't, you know, a great dancer and all that, and instead I wanted to kind of fit a theme that I went with, which was whitewashing the cast.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, again, I wasn't thinking towards that or away from that. I just picked people who I thought had a touch for what this would be, and I really could see this actress bringing a different kind of warmth to the role, while also being kind of proper and all. And I went with Lily James.
Okay. Lily James, our audience would know from
Baby Driver.
Yes.
Yesterday. She's been in a bunch, maybe Downton Abbey? I don't know. Or am I wrong? I could be totally wrong. I haven't seen that. I don't know.
I don't think she was in Downton Abbey.
No. Yeah, whatever.
She was in Pam and Tommy.
Sure. Same thing. It's basically the same thing. So anyway,
she plays Pamela Anderson in it.
We now move on to the two stars.
Yeah. So Baby and Johnny. Let's go Baby first. Who'd you have for Baby? Johnny.
For Baby, again, this was tough because I wanted someone young, you know, but I wanted someone who could be just a goofball, but also could capture that seriousness of like coming of age where everything is like, oh my God, it's the end of the world kind of thing. And so I went with Florence Pugh.
Oh yeah, Florence Pugh was great. I loved her in Black Widow, actually.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her. I thought she was a highlight in Black Widow, and then comedically, her timing in the Hawkeye series was just awesome. And like, so
oh, absolutely,
I could just see her being serious, being a goof. And I don't know if she's a dancer, but she's obviously trained extensively for, you know, martial arts and stunts. So I'm gonna guess that she could pull that off.
Oh yeah, there's. She could absolutely slide into a dancing role with little to no effort.
So who do you have?
For my pick, so in keeping with sort of a mixed race couple, I'm trying to think about a younger black actress, and I ran across Amanda Stenberg, she was in The Hunger Games, the first Hunger Games movie is Rue.
Oh, okay, sure.
She's been in, you know, TV series and stuff like that ever since. But so yeah, that's who I went with for Baby.
All right, well, that brings us to the final pick here, our bad boy, Johnny.
Johnny Castle. I have to tell you, it was very hard not to go Tom Holland and Zendaya, for Johnny and Baby. It would have been very easy and lazy for me to do, but I decided not to do that, and instead go. I'm still gonna pick Tom Holland for Johnny.
You know, I don't blame you. I know he's a good dancer. I had that whole Tom Zendaya thing would have been a fun dynamic. So like even just thinking about that, like that was on my mind for a little bit too. But on my end, I decided Tom is just a little too fresh-faced and nice, and I needed someone who could really be a bit more of a bad boy and who could rock just a touch of a mullet if needed.
So you went with Pete Davidson.
You would think. But no. I went with Dacre Montgomery.
Dacre Montgomery is a solid choice.
And for if you don't know, but if our listeners don't know him by his name, he was in the Power Rangers movie reboot, and he's more recently in Stranger Things as Billy. And I think he has that great like part heartthrob, part bad boy. And yeah, so I could see him charming old ladies just like he did in Stranger Things. I could see, you know, quote unquote old ladies. But so really playing that role, I think would be, I was pretty proud of that pick. I think that'll work well.
Yeah, no, for sure. That was a great choice. We did it.
We
got through a Dreamcasting, John. We came back from a break. We got through Dreamcasting. We picked a great movie, and we picked a great theme. We're actually going to keep on this theme for a few weeks. We think that's probably what we're going to do from now on, is we're just going to pick a theme and run with it for a few weeks and see how those go and then move on to something else. So these next few weeks are going to be a summer of fun. We're going to take movies about summer vacation and spending time with friends and growing and things like that. We're gonna watch those, so be on the lookout for those in the coming weeks. Anything else you wanted to talk about with Dirty Dancing, John, before we close the show?
You asked me if I have any extra little tidbits or anything.
Yeah, final thoughts or...
Final thoughts.
Revelations. You're going to say, nah, fuck you guys. I actually hated this movie.
I think Dirty Dancing Havana Nights was a better movie. Just kidding. No.
Do we have to watch it now and find out if that's true?
It's 400 degrees worse, so no. We don't. Because
it's 400 degrees in Havana, but...
Yeah. No, that I think we crushed. I think we go out on a high note. We did a thing, and we didn't fall apart too bad. And pat ourselves on the back and see if we can keep it going.
Good job, buddy. That's our show, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to us each and every week as we distill another favorite from our past. We have new episodes every Monday, so come and most Mondays. So come and check us out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Stitcher and all those different podcast apps. You can also check us out at tmdpod.com. That's our website. It was up to date 3 months ago-ish. and John's going to tell you how else you can get a hold of us. But if you would like to, you know, support us financially, give us a little pocket change, you can head on over to anchor.fm/the memory distillery/support, and you can support us there with a monthly donation of your choosing. If you do that, we do appreciate you and thank you. If you don't do that, we appreciate you and thank you anyway for listening to us and hanging out with us every week. So yeah, John.
All right, let's land this bird.
This spruce goose.
As the kids say. Now, the music we talked about today was really special and awesome. And you know what's even equally special and awesome-ish also? Destroying the Evidence by Semaphore. I think they still do our theme song. We'll see.
They do indeed.
All right, cool. Well, check them out because they're pretty awesome. Also, because we're still figuring out all the shaking the rust off, getting the website up to date, doing all the things so you can contact us. What we really say is either hop on Facebook and look up The Memory Distillery or just write us at thememorydistillery@gmail.com. That's going to be the best way to reach out and contact us. And, you know, we'll get things rolling again and we'll just keep this thing afloat. Yeah, sure. Thanks again for listening. I'm John Hokedeck.
And I'm Anthony Vernari, and this has been The Memory Distillery.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.